As we introduced in the first Mishnah, the concept of Temura is when one has a animal which he has already designated as a korban, and then he takes a different animal which is not yet sanctified, and he declares that he wants this animal to be a korban instead of the original animal. The Torah states that in such a case, the new animal does become sanctified, as if it replaced the first animal. However, the sanctity is not taken away from the first animal, and we end up with a situation where both animals now become holy and sanctified with that same sanctity that the original korban had. Now, this whole concept certainly only applies to a korban. Not anything which is designated to the Beis HaMikdash has the power to create temura. That is to say, there are two different types of hekdesh. Hekdesh is any item which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash. One type of hekdesh is Kedushas HaGuf, where the item itself becomes intrinsically sanctified and will be used in the Beis HaMikdash for a particular service. For example, a animal which is designated as a korban, or the oil which is going to be poured onto the Mizbeach. Those things are going to be used themselves within the service of the Beis HaMikdash. The second type of hekdesh is called Kedushas Domim, which literally means that only the value of the item is holy and sanctified, and that refers to something which is not going to be used itself within the service of the Beis HaMikdash, but rather the Beis HaMikdash have a right to the value of the item. And what that means is that the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash is going to take that item and sell it, and the money which they get from selling that item will be used for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, only something which has intrinsic holiness has the power to create temura, that is certain. And not only that, the Torah only introduced this novel concept of temura with regards to an animal which has been designated for a korban. So even other things which have intrinsic sanctification, for example, oil or wine which is going to be used for the actual service, if somebody says, I want this wine to be sanctified instead of this wine, then no temura will be created. Only the original wine will remain sanctified, and the new wine won't be sanctified at all, because the Torah only introduced the concept of temura with regards to korbanos, an animal which has been designated as a sacrifice. That having been said, we're going to see later on in the Masechta there are certain cases where the new animal which was designated is not fit to be used for exactly the same thing as the original animal. For example, if the original animal was designated to be a korban chatos, for example, this particular type of sacrifice which is brought to atone for certain sins, and the Torah requires that only a female animal be used as a korban chatos. So if somebody takes a male animal and he says that I want this male animal to be in place of my korban chatos, my animal which has been designated to be brought as a korban chatos, even if temura will take effect, that new animal cannot be brought as a korban chatos. So although it does gain the sanctification like a korban chatos, it can't actually be brought as a korban chatos. And the Mishnah later on will discuss what exactly to do with such an animal. But for now, the first part of this Mishnah is going to show that that does not prevent temura being created. Memir min ha-bokar al ha-tzoin, temura can take effect from bokar, which refers to animals like cows and bulls, the cow family essentially. If the first original animal which had been designated as a korban was from the family of cows, al-hatzoin, there is the power to create temura onto tzoin, which refers to sheep and goats. If somebody takes a sheep, for example, and he says that I want this sheep to be instead of the cow, which is already designated as a korban chatos, temura would take effect, even in cases where the Torah requires that the original korban which was designated be bought from a cow, and not from a sheep or goat. Nevertheless, temura will still take effect. Uminatzon ala bokar, and the same goes other way around, from a sheep or goat, which have been sanctified and designated as a korban, that can affect temura onto a animal from the cow family. Likewise, min ha-kvosim ala izim, from sheep onto goats, min ha-izim ala kvosim, from goats onto sheep, min ha-zchorim ala kevos, temura can be created from male animals which have sanctification onto female animals, or from female animals onto male ones. Because the Torah, when talking about the concept of temura, says that it happens behema bebehema. When one wants to substitute one animal for another animal, that implies that any type of animal would be included in this idea of temura. And now the Mishnah takes us a step further. Umina tumimim al bali mumin. Tumura takes effect and can be created from an unblemished animal, which is fit to be offered as a sacrifice, as a korban, onto an animal which has a blemish which invalidates it from being brought as a korban. In this case, it's not just that the animal's not fit for that particular type of korban, but the new animal upon which sanctity is being placed is not fit to be brought as any type of korban because it has a blemish. Nevertheless, tumura is still created, umibale mumin ala tamimim, and likewise from an animal which has a blemish, if that was the original animal designated as a korban, that can create tumura onto a animal which does not have a blemish and is fit for being brought as a korban. And these last two cases are actually explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, lo yachli fenu v'loyomer oisai. You shall not switch the animal, you shall not create tamura with it. Toiv bara, a rabba toiv. A good animal, literally, via a bad animal, or a bad animal via a good animal. And the Mishnah is interpreting the bad and good in the pasuk as talking about whether it has a blemish, a wound which would invalidate it from being brought as a korban. That's considered to be a bad korban. And a good korban refers to one which does not have a blemish. And the pasuk needs to say this explicitly, because otherwise we would not have known that tumura applies to such a case, since an animal with a blemish is intrinsically not fit as a korban at all. Now the Mishnah is going to take a moment to elaborate on one of those two cases. Ezu toiv bara, what is the case of a, so to speak, good animal that refers to an animal which does not have a blemish, which is gaining sanctity from a, so to speak, bad animal, meaning that the original animal which had been designated as a korban was an animal with a blemish. What is that case? And essentially the question of the Mishnah is that, as we introduced, the whole concept of tamura only applies to something which has intrinsic holiness. Not only that, it only applies to korbanos, which have intrinsic holiness. But certainly something which only has sanctity of its value, but it itself would never be able to be used in the Beis HaMikdash itself, part of the service, certainly can't create tamura. And if somebody takes an animal and he says, I want this animal which has a blemish to become a korban, not in the case of tamura, an original hektish designation, he declares, I want this animal which has a blemish to be a korban. That designation is not valid. And although the animal would become the property of the Beis HaMikdash, only its value would be sanctified. Meaning that the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash would take the animal, sell it, and he would use the money which he gets from selling it. But the animal itself, which has a blemish to start with, would not be designated as a korban. So essentially, that animal is just like any item in the world which has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash, where the value is considered to be in the possession of the Beis HaMikdash. But this doesn't have the sanctity of a korban at all, and therefore, how can tamura apply to it at all? The Mishnah answers, it's referring to bali mumin, a animal which has a blemish, but shekodam hekdeshan es mumon. It was first designated to the Beis HaMikdash before it developed its wound. In such a case, although when it does develop its wound, its blemish, it can no longer be used as a korban, since it did once have that proper intrinsic sanctity of a sacrifice, of a korban, even once it becomes invalidated, it still does retain, at least to a certain extent, that original level of intrinsic holiness which the animal had. And because of that, it could still cause and create tamura. Continues the Mishnah. One can create tamura on one animal as a replacement, or he can get that sanctity from two animals, meaning if somebody says, I want this particular animal to be as a replacement for two animals which I've already designated as a korban. The tamura would take effect, and now you would emerge with three animals which have the sanctity of the korban. Ushnaim be'echad, or two new animals from one sanctified animal already. Or even echad be'meo, meo be'echad. One new animal as a replacement for 100 animals, umeo be'echad, or if he states that he wants 100 new animals to replace the one korban which he already designated, in all of these cases, the tamura would take effect. The term behema, an animal, which is used in the Torah, can refer to both a single animal as well as multiple animals. However, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, "Ein memirin ela echad be'echad." Only one animal can become tamura as a result, as a replacement of one animal. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'hoyahu utumurosai," and it, meaning the original animal which already had sanctity, and its tamura will become sanctified. We see that the Torah is comparing it and the new animal. So mahu miyuchad, just like it, the original animal, the Torah is referring to in a singular form. So talking about one individual animal, af tamuros miyuchedes, so to its tamura, its replacement, which the person is trying to have as a replacement, all of that would only apply to one individual single animal. Mishnah Gimel. Now the Mishnah turns to explain what is excluded from tamura based on that same pasuk of behema bebehema. That tamura applies when you are trying to replace one animal for another animal, and therefore eima mirin evarim beuborim. Tamura does not take effect on individual limbs of the animal when the person declares that should replace a fetus of a korban. If somebody designates a female animal to be a korban, and that animal carries a fetus, so the fetus also has sanctity, it's part of the mother animal, and once it is born, it will have the sanctity of that korban. Nevertheless, right now, it's not considered to be a behema, an animal. It's not fully developed. And the other way around would also not work if you want to replace an individual limb of a korban with the fetus. And likewise, if you declare that individual limbs or a fetus should become the replacement for a full korban, or if you state that a full animal should become the replacement for an individual limb or for the fetus which has sanctity, all of these cases involve either the already sanctified animal or the new animal which he wants to sanctify, and that is not included in behema, and therefore tamura would not take effect. Rabbi Yossi says, "Memir mevarim b'shleimim." Tamura can take effect on individual limbs when he comes to replace, to say that it should be the replacement and the substitute for a full animal, which is a korban already. But Rabbi Yossi agrees that v'lo yishleimim be'ivarin. If you are stating that the new animal, which is a full animal, should be the replacement for an individual limb, then he agrees that that would not take effect. And Rabbi Yossi explains his reasoning. Omar Rabbi Yossi explained, "V'halibam ukdoshim, is it not true that regarding regular korbanos, regarding the original designation of a korban, ha'omer, one who declares raglo shel zoy oila, the leg of this animal should become a korban oila?" That's a particular type of sacrifice. The law is, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, kula oila. The entire animal becomes sanctified as a korban oila. The way it works is that individual leg becomes sanctified because that was his designation, and automatically, as soon as a single part of the animal has sanctity, that is spread over the rest of the animal, and automatically, as sort of a next stage, it all becomes sanctified. Af so too, kishayomai raglo shel zoy tachas zoy, if somebody says that the leg of this animal should be as a replacement for this whole animal, essentially, that's like saying this animal should be a replacement for that animal. Because if the sanctity will indeed take effect on the leg of this new animal, then it will spread to the entire animal. So you'll end up with a case where one animal was going to replace the original animal. And the law of tamura should state that they should both become sanctified. So that is his argument, and therefore tehei kulo tamura tachteha, all of the new animals should become a tamura as a replacement of the original animal. The truth is, the Chachomim who argue against Rabbi Yossi, although the Mishnah doesn't bring their opinion, say that you can't compare, because the way that it works is that you're first sanctifying the leg, and then once the leg becomes sanctified, automatically the rest of the animal also gains that sanctity. But in this case, since the Torah says that tamura only applies to a full animal, so the leg never became sanctified for that sanctity to spread to the rest of the animal. And that is why the Chachomim argue against Rabbi Yossi. Mishnah Dalet. The next two Mishnayos bring a number of different cases which don't actually have direct connection to the Masechta. However, one of the examples does, and therefore the Mishnah brings all of the examples. A Meduma is a mixture of Truma, which is a certain portion of one's produce which is given to Koyanim, and it's forbidden for a non-Koyan to eat that produce. And if this Truma gets mixed with Chulin, Chulin refers to regular non-holy produce, then at least midrabbanon, one requires 100 times more chulin than truma in order for that mixture to be permitted. If there's any less than that, then all of the mixture is forbidden because of that small part of it which is truma and cannot be eaten by a non-kohen. Obviously, the mixture is permitted for a kohen, but for a non-kohen who cannot eat truma, he would not be able to eat any of that mixture, and that mixture is called meduma. What happens if part of that mixture falls into other produce, which is totally chulin? It's all permitted produce. We don't require that there be 100 times more of that chulin than this part of the mixture which fell into it. Because even the part of the mixture which fell into it is not considered to be all truma. It's a meduma, it's part of a mixture. And based on the proportion of the mixture which is truma, that is how much we assume the part which fell out of the mixture contains of truma. So for example, if let's say 10% of the meduma mixture of truma and chulin, if 10% of that is truma, and part of that mixture falls into chulin, into regular permitted produce, so only 10% of that small amount which fell out is considered to be truma. And all that we would need in this new mixture would be that there be 100 times that small amount of truma. 100 times that 10% of the bit which fell in. And that, the Mishnah says in this short sentence, Eina meduma medamea lelefi cheshbon, the meduma mixture would only create a new meduma, which would be forbidden according to the proportions of truma to chulin based on the first mixture. And that's basically as we explained. Now, although in general, if there is 100 times the amount of chulin than truma, the entire mixture will be permitted, because the chulin, the totally permitted produce, nullifies the truma, which is forbidden produce for a non-kohen. This is not the case where the truma does something very significant for the mixture, and therefore, if truma yeast is used to cause dough to rise, even if that yeast represents less than 1/100th of the mixture, since it makes such a significant difference to the mixture, to the chulin, it cannot be just nullified like that, and therefore it would all be forbidden. What happens if part of that dough falls into other totally chulin, totally permitted dough, and causes it to rise? We do not view all of that dough which fell into the new dough as truma. Rather, we take into account the original proportions of truma and chulin in the original mixture, and the new dough would only be forbidden if there was enough of the... If we take the bit of the original dough which fell into it, and based on the proportions of the mixture, we see that even without the addition of chulin, the truma could have caused the new dough to rise by itself. If there's enough forbidden produce, there's enough truma, that by itself it could have caused the new dough to rise, only then would the new dough be forbidden. However, if only as a result of the combination of the truma and the chulin, that is what caused the new dough to rise, this is a case of zev or zegoyrem, where there are two different things which cause a particular result. One of the causes comes from something forbidden, one of the causes comes from something permitted. And according to this Mishnah, that would be permitted. So the new dough would be permitted even for non-Kohanim. And that's what the Mishnah now means in this also short sentence, Eina mechumatz mechametz ela lefi cheshbon. Something which has been caused to rise would forbid something, a new piece of dough which it causes to rise, based on the proportions of the original mixture of truma and chulin. Now the last case of the Mishnah talks about a mikveh, which is a body of natural water which is used to purify people or purify items. And the minimum size for a mikveh is 40 se'ar, and that 40 se'ar has to be natural rainwater. If you take water which in a vessel, in a utensil, and you pour that water into the mikveh, if there aren't yet 40 se'ar in the mikveh, then it would invalidate the mikveh. That having been said, there is a method called hamshocha, which is where you allow the rainwater to go first onto some ground, and then basically flow from the ground into the mikveh. Instead of being manually poured into the mikveh, it's allowed to flow onto the ground into the mikveh. However, this method of hamshocha only would validate the mikveh if there is already a majority of the mikveh which came from totally natural water where the rain fell directly into the mikveh. And therefore the Mishnah says, in my ma'amash uvim, poslan sa mikveh, this drawn water which flows into the mikveh via the method of hamshacha, that would only invalidate the mikveh el fi cheshbein, according to the calculation, meaning you would need to work out if there is already 21 sa'ah, which would be the majority of the mikveh already from totally natural water, and then you could fill up the rest of the mikveh via hamshacha. Now hamshacha could even be if you pour the water onto the ground or into some sort of hole, and it would flow from there into the mikveh. Even though it was manually poured, since it wasn't manually poured into the mikveh itself, this method of hamshacha would validate the mikveh. But as the Mishnah is teaching us, that would only be if the majority of the mikveh already came from totally natural water. Mishnah Hey, if somebody becomes impure from a dead body, the way that he needs to be purified is by getting a solution which contains the ashes of a pora aduma, a particular type of red cow, getting that solution sprinkled onto him. Now when that solution is made, ein mechatos, this solution which contains the ashes of a pora aduma, they are not nasin, they do not become valid, mechatos, as this solution of pora aduma ashes, eloi matan efer, except with the application of the ashes. That is to say, that the ashes need to be added into the utensil which contains this solution after the water. First, water needs to be added, and then the ashes, and only then would it be valid. As opposed to if ashes were put into the utensil first, and then the water, that would not be valid. A besa pras is a field in which there was a grave, and that field was ploughed over, such that there is a concern that pieces of the bones of the dead body were spread across the field, and although this is quite unlikely, because the plough doesn't generally dig that deep into the ground, midrabbanon, anything within 100 amos of that grave, we are concerned that it contains some bones which are large enough to make somebody impure, and therefore if somebody touches the ground within 100 amos of where the grave originally was, they would become tomei. Now what happens if somebody starts ploughing from an area within that 100 amos, and he ploughs there and continues further out in that same field? The Mishnah says, ein beis hapras, eis beis hapras. This beis hapras does not cause another beis hapras to be created, because we're not concerned that far. And therefore only 100 amos within the original grave would become a beis hapras, and somebody who touches that ground would become tomei. V'lo truma achar truma, there is no truma after truma. The Gemara explains this is referring to a very specific case where two people jointly own a particular amount of produce, and they both separate this gift of truma from the produce to be given to a kohen, one after the other. They don't tell each other, they both separate the truma, and by doing so, they are both showing that they didn't want the other person to separate the truma, rather they want to do it themselves. But because they are partners, they need the other one's permission, and therefore both of their designations of truma would be invalid. Alright, now finally we come to the example which we need for our masechta, v'lo tumura isa tumura. An animal which it itself became sanctified only because of tumura cannot cause an additional tumura to be created. In addition, v'lo havlad isa tumura, the child of an animal that had been designated as a korban, although the law is that the child also becomes sanctified, it cannot create tumura. If somebody wants to replace that animal with a new animal, then the new animal would not become sanctified. Rabbi Yehuda says, Havlad Oisa Temura. The child can cause Temura to be created, and their argument is based on how to interpret the Pesukim. But Omruloi, the Chachomim said back to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not correct, rather Hegdash Oisa Temura. Only an animal which it itself had been designated to the Beis HaMikdash as a korban can create Temura, but Loi Havlad V'loi Temura Oisa Temura. The child of the korban, as well as the tamura of the korban, cannot create a new tamura when somebody wants to replace that.